Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your texts, your voicemails, anything you got for us. Drop that for us at 331-979-1369. We got Darnell Mayberry on the episode today. Fantastic conversation with Darnell from The Athletic. He's had an interesting roller coaster of a season, and so we haven't talked to him since late January, so we got his thoughts on a bunch of different things. On top of that, too, we talked to him about covering Russell Westbrook, so that was an interesting part of the conversation, too. Make sure you're following Darnell on Twitter, and without further ado, here is Darnell Mayberry.
Right now, we're very pleased to welcome back to Locked On Bulls one of our favorite people to talk to. He is the senior Bulls writer for The Athletic Chicago. He's Darnell Mayberry. You can follow him on Twitter at Darnell Mayberry. And if you aren't already subscribed to The Athletic, you should be. And speaking of, that's one of the first things we'll be talking about, a recent piece that he wrote about a guy he used to cover, Russell Westbrook. Darnell, welcome back to the pod, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us. So before we get into Bulls talk, last week you wrote this fascinating article about Russell Westbrook, one of the most interesting characters in the NBA today, and a guy that you spent several years covering and following closely when you were covering the Thunder in Oklahoma City before coming here to cover the Bulls, kind of highlighting everything that has happened to Russell Westbrook, about Russell Westbrook, and, you know, in this city that has so embraced the Thunder as their team. And Russ has been a guy who's been there essentially since the beginning. He's the one who stuck around after Kevin Durant bolted, but he also has continuously fallen short of the ultimate goal of getting them that NBA championship, and has also been a guy much maligned and criticized for his, you know, on-court performance, especially in crunch time in the playoffs, recently just getting bounced by Dame Lillard and the Blazers, and also some of his off-the-court stuff, including how he handles his relationship with the media. First off, what inspired you to write this piece about Westbrook now that you have moved on and are covering a different team?
I'm glad you asked that way, Matt, because I didn't want to write it. And you know, I've literally written a book on the Thunder, not the book, but a book, and I thought that chapter of my life was done. So I didn't really want to write about Russell Westbrook or the Thunder. But, you know, my editor, John Greenberg, who you guys know, reached out to me and said that I think it was actually Mark Silverman from ESPN 1000, who he does work for ESPN 1000, right? I'm still getting my bearings.
Yep, you're good.
With the personality. So he said that Silverman reached out to him, and when Russ was going through all of that stuff with the media in the first round saying next question, not really the media. It's one person, my old coworker, Barry Trammell. You know, I guess Silverman reached out to Greenberg and said, hey, I'd be really interested in reading Darnell's perspective on what it's like to cover Russ. And I was a little hesitant to do it because I didn't want to, number one, going back to, I thought that chapter of my life was closed. I'm ready to move on and focus on the Bulls and, you know, establishing some perspective up here in Chicago. But, you know, I took some advice. I bounced it off a couple people, and I didn't want to just write a straight up Russ piece. I tried to weave in, and that's the beauty of working at The Athletic. You know, I didn't have to write it immediately after game two or whatever, when it really became national news that Russ was doing this. And it just kind of started taking off like wildfire. So I had a little opportunity to let it breathe, see how the series played out a little bit. And, you know, once the series was over, I had a chance to have a more complete picture of the entire story, or more of the entire story, as opposed to just one little sliver of it. And then I was able to mix that little sliver in and appease people like Mark Silverman and John Greenberg, but also tell a more complete story of the Thunder. So I'm happy with the way it turned out. And fortunately, I work at a place like The Athletic that allows us to give the story some space and some time and let it breathe and develop. And, you know, I was able to have a fuller picture. So I was happy about it.
I loved it as a follow-up too, because I actually had read the Grantland article that was published about 4 years now. It was published back in 2015, and that kind of sparked a conversation between Ryan Russillo and Bill Simmons on Bill Simmons' podcast last week. And it was more of a broader picture of like, should the way that media is covered in the NBA, should that change at all? But I want to get your perspective on Westbrook really quick. For those that didn't read your article in The Athletic, I highly suggest that they should. What was kind of, I guess, is there one main point that you can kind of think of when you go back and think about your time covering Westbrook and kind of how he transformed as a player from being drafted all the way to becoming the superstar that he is? What was the hardest thing, I guess, would say about covering him and seeing him kind of transform over those years?
You mean transform on the court or in the locker room with the media?
Both.
You know, on the court, it was, you know, he just came out of nowhere. I mean, you could see the athleticism, you could see the fire and just the intensity, but he was just, you know, reckless, and he was just this ball of energy that was uncontrollable, and he didn't even know how to control it. He was like a Ferrari. He didn't know how to drive, you know, he just went out there and found ways to make incredible plays, but he didn't have the control that he needed. And you still see that today, but, you know, I think all of the criticism really helped drive him early. And you saw whatever people said he couldn't do, he went out there and did. There's no coincidence behind him leading the league in assists, I think, the last 2 years, right at 10 a game. So, you know, that's because people have always said he's not a point guard. He doesn't make other players better. So what Russell Westbrook's mentality is, if you say I can't do something, I'm going to go out there and show you that I can do it. So we still know that he's not the most natural point guard on the floor, but he's leading the league in assists largely because people have said to him his whole life or his whole career that he's not a point guard and he doesn't make his teammates better. So this is more like I'll show you. And people use that to say he's not a ball hawk. He does make his teammates better. But, you know, there's a calculated reason behind a lot of what Russell Westbrook does. And then just in terms of, you know, with the media, he's never been a very good quote. Even when he was a rookie, you know, guys come into the league and they're new and they don't understand really, you know, what goes on and how things work. And so they can be a little timid, a little standoffish as rookies, as they are in their shell and trying to figure things out. That's normal. Russell Westbrook was a lot like that. He was a little different in the sense that, you know, he just didn't give you much anything. So when you tried to get to know what makes him tick or where he comes from or, you know, what's important to him or how he views the game, you just didn't really get much insight from him. And then over time, he could be cordial. He could be, you know, jovial at times. He was moody. But over time, that just, I think at some point he just said, you know what, I can't win with the media. They're going to write whatever they want. They're going to say whatever they want. The Thunder went through a ton of criticism at that time with, Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook early in their careers, even James Harden early in his career. So there was a lot of attention on him, and I think he just made up in his mind at a certain point that, you know, the media is going to do whatever they want to do, so he's going to act however he wants to act.
Darnell, I'm curious, you know, as someone whose livelihood revolves around getting that soundbite from players, getting a story that you can share with the fans who want to hear about these players and want to hear from them on a regular basis. Now that you've come and have been covering the Bulls for the last couple of years, anybody, either present or past, that you have, you know, been following on the daily basis in a Bulls jersey remind you in any way, based on their behavior and how they relate to the media, of Russell Westbrook? And even if not, like, just as someone who's trying to always get that quality soundbite and get that story, based on certain players and the different ways that they behave and approach the media, do you have different tactics for how you go about getting that soundbite that you want and maintaining a positive relationship with these guys?
Jabari Parker was kind of going down Russell Westbrook road when the season first started last year. He was walking out, you know, without talking to reporters. When he did talk to reporters, you guys saw all of those clips and like in the transcripts, they were like 30 words. So I felt like Jabari was about to go down Russell Westbrook drive, but, you know, somebody ended up talking to him and he snapped out of it. Fortunately for us, Jabari Parker does not have the credentials of a Russell Westbrook, so he couldn't continue that act.
Almost the same paycheck, though, Darnell.
That is surprising. Yeah, I'm still trying to figure that one out. But as far as the tactics, you know, when Jabari was doing that, I was looking at, and you go through so many things in this business, and you try to learn from them. And after going through 7 years of covering Russell Westbrook, I just kind of told myself, this guy doesn't help me do my job. Not that it's his job to help me do my job, but, you know, I'm not getting anything from this. So, and it's only adding to my stress level and reducing my quality of life. So I have the mentality that, you know, why try? You know, fortunately, I've seen Barry Trammell, who I wrote about in that piece, and just tried to share some perspective on the background that people don't know, try to pull the curtain back a little bit. I'm glad that I got to see such a professional handle it, because he gave me a different way of looking at it. That is a new tactic. I wouldn't have kept going at Russell Westbrook like that. And I say that loosely. He wasn't going at Russell Westbrook. He was asking questions, but he was being professional. He was there to do a job, and he showed up and did his job, and he wasn't going to allow Russell Westbrook to dictate how, when, and how often he does his job. So, I really respect how Barry handled it, because he kept asking questions, and ultimately he broke Russell Westbrook. And the people who've been around Russell Westbrook, like myself, are amazed that a 58-year-old columnist from Oklahoma City has broken Russell Westbrook, one of the most headstrong dudes in the NBA. So I just really love his professionalism. My tactic would have been a little bit different. I probably would have stopped asking and just gone somewhere else in the locker room and never really ask Russell Westbrook questions. But I do think that there was value in how Barry did it. I mean, he sent a loud and clear message to Russell Westbrook and to the rest of the country that, you know, the media is there to do a job. And yes, we do have some bad apples in this business. It's not all, you know, rosy in this business, but, you know, the good ones are there and they show up and they do a job and they do it the right way. And Barry was one of those guys. And I'm glad that I was able to learn a lesson from afar on how he handled it.
I really appreciated that too. And I read his article too, just kind of following up on that. And I think in the day and the age of social media too, people formulate their own opinions without actually hearing it from the main source a lot of the time. And that can go for anything. Just even outside of basketball, I feel like in the day of Twitter and all of that, people formulate an opinion on one person or one idea before even really getting all the facts straight. So I appreciated that. And for somebody that wasn't a Thunder fan, for a lot of Bulls fans that are listening to this and probably read your article too, you don't get that type of perspective and you don't understand that. And it was nice to hear that from you. I kind of want to transition away, and with this being a Bulls podcast, we'll focus a little bit on the Bulls now. You brought up Jabari Parker. The last time we talked to you, Jabari Parker was still a Bull, and so was Bobby Portis. And a lot of interesting things have happened with this Bulls team since the last time we talked to you. I want to start here, though. The Otto Porter trade, what did you think of it initially, and where are you at now in terms of who Otto Porter can be as a player and what he can do for this Bulls team?
Initially, you know, I thought, hey, Otto Porter's a solid player. He's a good shooter. He's limited, but, you know, he fills a hole, and he makes a lot of money. Those were my initial thoughts. So I was pretty lukewarm on it. I mean, they became a better team, which should be the goal or among the primary goals for any team in trading, but unfortunately business is often the primary or the driving factor or in the bottom line. So I think they kind of overlooked the bottom line and the business and how they could structure this roster and maneuver under the cap. But you can't argue too much with it from a basketball standpoint. And so, you know, I like it. It's I don't like that they took on the extra 2 years of his deal. I think that there was a lot of flexibilities they could have had over that time. And it takes them away from being a bad team. So they're not going to have a chance at a high draft pick after this year. I think they got sort of lucky with all those injuries this year to be able to have the fourth worst chance. And it doesn't put them very close to championship contention. So in one stroke, they have really set themselves up for mediocrity again. And I just didn't understand that, because Otto Porter is good enough to keep you from being, along with Wendell Carter Jr., Lauri Markkanen, and Zach LaVine, good enough to keep you from being a bottom feeder, not good enough to make you a championship contender. So why exactly make that move? Yes, it makes you better, but there's other ways that I think they could have gone about it and used that cap space. And that, to me, is the biggest issue that I have with the trade, because there's just so many other ways that I think they could have gone about it. You just never know. And if a natural follow-up would be, well, what are those ways? You never know half the time, because a lot of things pop up that are unexpected. You know, no one expected Anthony Davis to just come out and say, I want out of New Orleans, or his people or whatever. So, you know, when something like that pops up, you got to be staying ready and have the assets to be able to make a move. And I think they've kind of pigeonholed themselves a little bit. And now they're going to have to figure out a way to be competitive and win at a high level with this roster, because, you know, after this draft pick, there's not going to be many more ways to improve it without trading some of these guys. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do from here.
We're talking with The Athletic's Darnell Mayberry, senior Bulls writer here on Locked On Bulls. Darnell, as the season concluded and we heard the season-ending press conference from John Paxson, you had a great column kind of recapping the season and that press conference, where you used John Paxson's own words, which were, luck and hope are not a strategy or a plan, which was more in line with talking about, I believe it was a question regarding this upcoming draft lottery in a couple of weeks and what adding a player like Zion Williamson could do for this rebuild. But you kind of simply and eloquently said yourself, all right, John Paxson, well, if hope and luck are not a strategy or a plan, like, what is? What is the plan? And you also spent a lot of time in that column breaking down the decision to not only really boiling in the transition, but extension and outside of that month of February, when we saw this, you know, maybe it was fool's gold, maybe it wasn't, but it was a mostly healthy roster. Markkanen and LaVine were playing at a high level. And then once they started shutting guys down, it's really kind of hard to judge what Jim Boylan was doing as a coach on the court, because he was essentially coaching a bunch of G League guys. To me, one of the most interesting parts of that Paxson season-ending press conference talking about Jim Boylan is when he said that he, since Boylan took over as head coach, had had more time interchanging dialogue and talking about the team and what was going on than probably the previous several guys combined, citing the previous multiple head coaches combined. And maybe that's just Tibbs and Fred, or maybe that even goes back to Vinny. Like, who knows? I was really shocked to hear him say that. I'm curious what your response to that is, that in just maybe 3 months' time, Paxson spent more time having dialogue with his head coach than multiple head coaches before that.
Yeah, I don't really like him saying that, because it feels more like they gave him the job because he's got a good relationship with his bosses, as opposed to a good relationship with players, or as opposed to being a, you know, tactically competent NBA head coach. You know, those are the reasons why I think guys deserve jobs, not because you have a good relationship, working relationship with your bosses. And it's clear that Jim Boylan does have a great working relationship with his bosses. And I think everyone can see that, but here we are and he's got, you know, he's going into this next season, and no one can say for certainty whether he's you know, the right coach for this time in the rebuild. So I didn't like that he said it, but, you know, I'm happy that they have great communication.
Matt and I got into a...
How does that help the Bulls?
Yeah. Matt and I got into a little bit of a heated debate a couple days ago on one of our shows when we were kind of talking about Boylan's style. And even just this year, as soon as he got hired, and is Boylan the guy that's actually kind of commanding what's going on with the X's and O's, or is it being trickled in from other outside sources? He mentions John Paxson a lot talking to him. He mentions Doug Collins a ton, not just Jim Boylan, but I feel like John Paxson has mentioned him a handful of times now over the last couple of months. What is your take on Jim Boylan as a head coach in the NBA? Can he find a way to lead this team better than they were? Obviously, a healthier roster is going to help, but in terms of looking at maybe his progression as an NBA coach, the similar style of way that we look at players, is there a ceiling on Jim Boylan as a head coach, and do they really believe in him, and is he the one controlling everything as far as the X's and O's go, or do you feel like he's maybe doing this as doing this with outside advice and maybe taking that lane more so than maybe presenting his own ideas?
Yeah, I think there's definitely some input being provided from what's there. Just look at the emphasis and the focus on driving the basketball, paint touches. You know, I think a lot of people like to poke fun at Jim Boylan for all these post-ups with Robin Lopez, but if you just look at some of their comments, I think that trickles down from the top. You know, I think they were tired of guys just floating and drifting around the perimeter and, you know, not getting the ball inside. And unfortunately, that's the way the game is being played now. So it's kind of counterintuitive, but they want to see the ball go inside a little bit. Not that they don't want to shoot threes, but they want to pound it in the paint and try to get an open three off of ball movement. Or driving into the paint. So, you know, I just think that Jim is listening to what his bosses are saying, and that's ingratiated him to his bosses, but it's also brought up some questions about, you know, if he's really in charge, like you're asking, if he's running the show from a scheming standpoint, or, you know, if he's just kind of a placeholder. And I think next season is going to show us a lot. He's going to have a full off season. They're already, you know, over there working as we speak. He's going to have a full training camp, and he's going to have a lot of consistency and continuity coming back with the roster. So, you know, and hopefully, you know, he's going to have health. And so there are not going to be any excuses next year for Jim Boylan. We're going to get a true indication of what he is and exactly how good of a coach he can be next year.
What's up, Bulls Nation? Matt here with a message from ZipRecruiter. Hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart. A place where growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. That place is ZipRecruiter.com. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidate, so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the very first day. And right now, Locked On Bulls listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/LockedOn. That's ZipRecruiter.com/LOCKEDON. ZipRecruiter.com/LockedOn. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Darnell, I mentioned a couple minutes ago that when Boylan took over, obviously we had the very rocky transition, including that 56-point loss to Boston, the near player mutiny, all that stuff. I believe when that was going on, you DM'd me to say the phrase shit show. And it certainly turned into a media circus, which was at least entertaining in a losing season for the fan base. I'm curious, though, about that month of February. When we saw Markkanen averaging 26-12, when we saw LaVine putting up 30-point games easily on a consistent basis, and the arrival of Otto Porter Jr. and how many ways that helped the team, opening up the offense, adding a high IQ player who was always on the floor making the right plays, shooting his open shots, making the right passes. How much of that do you actually buy into as if this roster is healthy, including the addition of Otto, and assuming they can find some kind of competent point guard this offseason, then that's something to build off of. The optimists and the fan base would want to say, well, look what we did in that month of February. Markkanen and LaVine are borderline all-star caliber players already, even though Markkanen's only in his second year. LaVine, his first fully healthy season coming off the ACL. Or was it fool's gold? It was a softer schedule. The offense was better, but the defense, which was supposed to be Boylan's calling card, was still terrible. And how much credit are you giving to Boylan for that month of February when things actually looked not terrible?
Yeah, they didn't play the best competition. But, you know, I'm going to go a different way with it, Matt. It's not just February. There's reason to be hopeful if you're a Bulls fan just because of what they've built. And I can debate all day long about how they've built it and whether or not these guys are ultimately championship-level players and a championship-level core, but they've got some promise there with Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen and Otto Porter Jr. and Wendell Carter Jr. I would be hopeful. You know, that's the makings of a playoff team. Now, if you're thinking that this is the makings of a championship team, I mean, let's get to May 14th and see if Zion Williamson gets here. But I like what this roster is, man. I think that they've done a lot of nice things since trading Jimmy Butler. You know, they hit on Markkanen, they hit on Wendell. Zach LaVine looks like he is worth his contract, but a lot of people thought he wouldn't be. And the Otto Porter move will help them, you know, regardless of any kind of cap implications going forward. So, you know, and then obviously they've got a high draft pick, lottery pick this year. So the core is in place, and those guys individually all did show you something. Wendell had a pretty good rookie season before he got hurt. Zach LaVine had that stretch where he was just on a tear, and he had played pretty well all season. He had a couple highs and lows, but, you know, for the most part, he played well all season. And Lauri Markkanen had that stretch. So Otto Porter came in and shot the ball incredibly well. So you can go on down the list about these guys and how they played well. And I just think that's the reason to be hopeful, not one stretch in February. I think if you look at the pieces that they put in place, they've done a really good job.
I want to circle back to Zach LaVine. You got a chance to talk to him one-on-one a little bit more exclusively. You know, just watching his time from the beginning of the season to now the end, and everything in the middle. When we talked to you last, Matt and I at least felt like maybe Zach LaVine wasn't buying into everything Jim Boylan was handing out. And then we got the month of February that happened, and we see Zach LaVine even offering to pay Boylan's fine at one point. You know, it was a drastic change, at least for me, hearing and seeing some of the things LaVine was saying. Even after, I remember specifically at the end of January, that Atlanta loss, where he was saying, you know, we weren't getting blown out like this, and something's got to change and something's different. For all the people that maybe were skeptical about LaVine last summer when the Bulls matched that contract with the Kings, what do you think has been the most impressive thing about his growth this year? Is it his play on the floor? Is it developing as a leader in the locker room? And what should fans be excited for in year three of the rebuild and the second full season of actually seeing what Zach LaVine can do as maybe the number one or the number two guy on this team?
You know, I think I'm going to point to something that people probably don't point to a lot. It may be an intangible. And so, you know, people might listen to this and roll their eyes, but I'm really impressed with the self-awareness of Zach LaVine, because as frustrating as he can be at times, whether it's his shot selection, whether it's his, you know, perceived selfishness or his defense, whatever the issue someone might have with Zach LaVine knows his weaknesses. He knows his flaws, and he, to me, is genuinely concerned or interested in improving on those flaws and becoming a better player. You know, a lot of players blow smoke, but when Zach LaVine talks about his issues, I think he genuinely cares about becoming a better player and working on his weaknesses to do whatever he's got to do to become the best player he can be. And I really believe him when he says he wants to be a better defender. He wants to, you know, move the ball more, take better shots, and you know, get to the free throw line more, all of these things. So I'd like to see him come back and implement some of those things, but I really do believe that he will, because he'll put in the work and he cares about what he needs to work on. And I think that's one of the most underrated things about Zach, and that's the thing that impressed me the most from being around him these two seasons.
Darnell, as you mentioned, you know, for all the skeptics out there, the Bulls have assembled a nice collection of young talent, and certainly four of their starting five look like they are in place for at least the next season or two, with LaVine, Otto, Markkanen, and Wendell, and we'll see if they end up adding a front court guy, if that changes the Markkanen-Wendell pairing in that front court moving forward. But to me, one of the hardest things about this season, watching all 82 games, was when the Bulls, either with Fred or Boylan, had to go to the bench, and how just absolutely depleted the back end of this rotation was. And certainly into March and the first couple of weeks of April, as the season rounded out, that it was just almost laughable that the names of people they were throwing out there. No offense to G League guys trying to you know, seize their opportunities, but come on, this was not an NBA roster. I'm curious who you think might stick around based on just who impressed you the most, or maybe something, rumblings you've heard being around the team. Because just yesterday, the Bulls official Twitter account had like a back in the gym, like working already kind of tweet, because we all know how much they love talking about keeping those guys in their building in the offseason for whatever reason. And one of the people included was Shaq Harrison, who certainly, you know, played his role dutifully, rose to the occasion more than once, and is a scrappy guy looking to earn a spot on a roster either here or elsewhere. Archie Diacono is going to be the team's special guest of honor at this NBC draft lottery watch party we're doing in a couple of weeks. And it seems like there's no way that Archie and Shaq are sticking around. They're adding two draft picks. They told us that they're going to look for a couple of veterans in free agency. They also saw, you know, Wayne Selden play some pretty decent minutes when he came in from the holiday trade. So of those fringe guys on this bench unit that was so bad this year, do you see any of them sticking around? And if so, who would you like to see stick around?
The only guys I really care to see remain are Ryan and Shaq, because the way that they hustle, the way that they play defense, the way that they find ways to impact the team, I would say winning, but they didn't do a lot of that. I think it's contagious. I think it's helpful. If you're trying to win, you can't always have guys out there, you know, putting up 20 points or 20 shots. You know, you need those role players, those fringe guys, and those two guys they'll do whatever you ask them to do. They'll guard anybody you ask them to guard, and chances are they're gonna do something on the court that's going to turn momentum. And, you know, I don't think they need to be on the floor all that much, but I think they're great guys, great options to have at the end of the bench that you could throw in a pinch. You bring up a good point, though, Matt, because they only have so many roster spots, and they're going to have to make some decisions on some guys. And I think you're going to have to see some trades being made to free up some room. They're going to have to move some guys. But I do know that they like Shaq and Archie. You know, they won't say this publicly, but they always talk about toughness and the importance of toughness. And, you know, we hear all these buzzwords all the time. Well, the Bulls are in an interesting spot where, you know, they're tougher guys or hardest playing guys, however you want to phrase it, are at the end of the bench. You know, the frontline guys are the guys that they're always talking about. They need to see more out of, you know, from that standpoint. The Lauri Markkanen, the Zach LaVine. In some cases, Otto Porter, he didn't get that much of a chance here before the injury. So Wendell Carter Jr. even needs to get stronger and learn how to play through contact, things like that. You don't have that problem. You don't see them saying that about Ryan Archidiakono and Shaq Harrison. They want more guys like that, not fewer. So I'd be surprised if both of those guys left. The problem is they're both replaceable easily, but or you can upgrade, I should say. I don't think it's easy to find guys that do what they do consistently, but you can certainly upgrade from a talent standpoint. But they like what they bring, and they feel like this team needs a lot more of that. So they got some decisions to make, man. I do know that they like them, but they need to upgrade their talent too.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that both of those dudes bust their ass as hard as they did, and they did it all season long too, regardless of the situation that they were put in. And Matt and I talked about it even back in January. You know, it's huge props for Shaq Harrison and Ryan Arcidiacono, who weren't guaranteed anything. Shaq Harrison getting cut by the Suns back in November, Ryan Arcidiacono being on only a partially guaranteed contract all the way up until January. So I think it's really cool the way that they were able to progress. And even if they're not going to be here as Bulls, I think it showed something. And I think it made their decision over the last month and a half even more difficult, because Shaq Harrison just came on the scene and all of a sudden we saw good things from him defensively. But I think the biggest question was his shot. Is like, can he score consistently? Can he be a guy that if you need a bucket in a pinch, can he get that? And can he do it consistently? And I think he's shown that. Although the competition in the back end of February and March isn't all the greatest, but still, I thought there was a lot of games where busting his ass on defense and then also coming down and scoring the amount of points he was in some of these games, that was kind of impressive. Speaking of the point guards, though, we got to talk about Chris Dunn. It seems like this is a topic that we talk about a lot on this show. And for the most part, from what we're hearing from Bulls fans, a lot of Bulls fans are out on Chris Dunn completely. Like, we're hearing even to the point where people don't even want to see him be a part of the bench, if that's part of it. What have you heard, and what do you feel like is the most likely outcome for Dunn going into this summer? Is he going to be back next season? Are the Bulls going to actively try to move him, in your opinion?
Yeah, so I'm actually working on a big Chris Dunn Q&A I got. I'm going to put my, you know, commentary, I guess, at the top, whatever you want to call it, and then just let him speak for himself about his season. And, you know, obviously it was a confusing season and a lot of questions about what we saw with him throughout the year. And so I tried to pose a lot of different questions to him. And so, you know, you guys are having me on before that thing publishes, but it's going to be a really interesting piece. And the biggest thing, my biggest takeaway from that Q&A with him is that it seemed like he was kind of throwing boiling under the bus a little bit, talking about the multi-handle ball system and, you know, how that kind of took away from his game, and it just wasn't really a nice fit. So my follow-up questions to him were, well, if that's the case and Jim Boylan's going to be back here and Zach LaVine's not going anywhere, neither is Larry Markkanen or Otto Porter, is there still room for you here on this roster? And you got to read the piece for the rest of the information. But it is insightful. It is interesting to hear Chris Dunn talk about the season through his own eyes and get his perspective on it. I think he still has value. I think that he can be a good piece as a bench player. I don't think that you just do away with him because he had a down year. He knows he needs to work on his shot. I'm not sure how much he's going to be able to improve that in one off season, but he knows that coming into this year, that wasn't the focus. The multi-handler system wasn't the focus, and, you know, he was focusing on doing other things and trying to run the team. And once he didn't have the ball in his hands as much, he felt that really hurt him. So I think he has a place on the team, man. I wouldn't just give him away for nothing. I think he still has a role.
Well, even if Dunn sticks around, Bulls fans are spending most of their time these days talking about the potential alternate solutions at the point guard spot, because we know, and Paxson admitted as much in his seasoning press conference, that it is a position they need to address. So, of course, there's all kinds of talk about what veteran point guard that might be the Bulls look to add in free agency. Of course, there are plenty of Rose stands out there advocating for a homecoming. I think you know how I feel about that. I think Jordan is a little more open to it than I am. But, I mean, he's one of many names. You can go Ricky Rubio. You can go, you know, some people have mentioned Darren Collison. I have my issues with him. Ish Smith, who cooked the Bulls with Detroit earlier this season, Jeff Teague, Jeremy Lin. Like, there's tons of names of veteran point guards who are going to be on that market in free agency this summer. I'm curious who might be at the top of your list if you were running this team and looking to add a veteran at that point guard spot.
Depending on the cost, I mean, it's hard to not be enamored with Patrick Beverley.
Right. But do you think that's realistic? I don't think they can lure him here and or afford him.
And they got $20 million sitting there. How much do you think Patrick Beverley's going to cost?
Well, I mean, they'd be foolish to offer him $20 million, and they've told us that they would like to spread that money out a little bit.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't think he's going to cost $20 million. I think you can get him for far less than that and still have, you know, space to maybe do something else with someone else. But I don't see why you don't think they would why they'll be able to lure him here.
Well,
I think he would stay with the Clippers, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, unless the Clippers like sign two huge deals, like whether they convince Jimmy or Kawhi or somebody to come play with them, and they can't afford to keep Pat Bev, I think he would even consider taking a pay cut or not taking a raise to stay with the Clippers, because I think he really likes playing there, and they just took the defending champion Warriors to six games. Like, the Bulls can't offer the same level of competition coming into next year that he has right now with the Clippers.
Yeah, but at the same time, you know, it's not his decision. You know, the Clippers have to, you know, if the Clippers get Kawhi and KD, or, you know, KD and Jimmy Butler, whoever, it's out of Patrick Beverley's hands.
True.
You know, they're gonna go with those superstars before they go with Pat Beverley, especially when they got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander coming right behind him, and the kid out of Boston College. What's his name?
Jerome Robinson.
Jerome Robinson, yeah. So you know, they've got some guys that they need to be grooming too, and you bring back Patrick Beverley, that could potentially stunt their growth. So the Clippers got some things. It's not open and shut, I don't think, for the Clippers this summer. But he's a guy, you know, I mean, like, forget how realistic it might be for a second. He's a guy that I like. I think that it is feasible. You know, I do hear you that Patrick Beverley would like to stay probably in LA of all places and win at a higher level than coming to Chicago, but there are selling points here, obviously. We all know them with Patrick Beverley. But he's the type of guy, man. He's the prototype. Terry Rozier is another guy that I've heard that the Bulls like, have their eye on. I think he costs more than Patrick Beverley, and I'm not sure how much better he is, frankly. But I do like him as well. And I'd like to hear your Darren Collison hate, Matt. Let me hear that. What do you got against Darren Collison?
I just would rather avoid the, you know, players who have issues off the court, whether it's Derrick Collison, whether it's Derrick Rosen, you know, not to say that I'm lumping them together with the issues that they've faced in the past with their off the court behavior, but I would just, when you have a multitude of options, I would rather avoid those guys entirely.
I got you. Yeah, the off the court matters are a whole other thing completely. But those are the three guys that, from a playing standpoint, I'd like. I wouldn't be opposed to Derrick Rose either, but I do understand all the baggage that comes with that. You know, I'm not pulled one way or the other. If he's available and everything works out, sure. If you got to jump through hoops to get him, I don't think it's all that much. You know, I don't think it's a smart play or worth it. But I'm not, you know, I could be swayed. I'm not convicted one way or the other. But the three guys I look at, Patrick Beverley, Terry Rozier, and Darren Collison.
Interesting. I think those are the names that we've kind of talked about. I mean, we've shuffled through. I mean, just to start, we haven't even hit the draft lottery. And I think we've talked about just about every dude that is going to be available this summer. So it's going to be interesting. I think a lot of, and I don't know, this is coming from personal opinion, but I think where the Bulls draft is going to have a huge impact on kind of where they shuffle their money in free agency this summer. Like, if they get Ja Morant, then they can look at possibly other options and not have to spend as much money on the point guard position. That's just my opinion, though. Darnell, as we kind of wrap this up, I'm curious, going through this entire Bulls season has been crazy. And some of the things that Matt and I were talking about, we're like, we forgot that it even happened at the beginning of the season. But from your standpoint, what was the funnest article that you wrote this year? What was the one that you enjoyed covering the most throughout this Bulls season?
Did you guys like the Lauri Markkanen rap song?
I loved it. I loved it.
Loved it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I listened to it yesterday. I listened to it like several times a week. It's so good.
I wish Lauri wasn't so unassuming and, you know, selfless, I guess is the right word, that he deflects so much attention. He didn't want any part of that story that I did. and bless his heart, you know, I get it, but I just wish he would have had a little bit more fun with it. But he just didn't want to talk about it. So, but it was cool to get his reaction, the reaction of his teammates, and they could poke fun at him a little bit. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the Zach LaVine tough shot piece I did, the early season thing with the near mutiny and all of that, you know, it actually, from a business standpoint, was the most successful pieces that I wrote back when, you know, they were going through that turmoil. But it's not fun, for me at least, it's not fun to chronicle things like that. I'd rather be talking about basketball. I'd rather be talking about personality. You know, one thing that didn't, I mean, the Derrick Rose, the 2010-11 Bulls piece that I did obviously ranks up there. But one thing that I did that no one really, it didn't get a lot of buzz was the Bobby Portis piece. That painted Bobby in a different light after everyone kind of looked at him as this goon who, you know, punched the lights out on a teammate. And I think Bobby is so much more than that, you know, than that one, you know, heated incident. So, you know, it was a rocky season, but I think it produced a lot of content that was insightful and enjoyable for the fans. And hopefully they can just come back next season with some health, man, and really stick to basketball, and we can talk about what's going on the court.
I think that's amazing that you brought that up too. And Matt and I try to illustrate that the best as we can is, I mean, we don't like sitting here and yelling and being critical and doing all of that. It's so much easier and so much more fun to talk about a team that's actually fun and exciting. Think about back in February, Matt and I, it was completely different. The tone of our show is completely different because of those wins. And even though that they were stacking up, I mean, quote unquote, meaningless wins, it's still way more fun to watch games. And maybe that's a no brainer at that point, but people, we don't want to be critical. We don't want to be talking about all of these negatives. But all your coverage at The Athletic, you and Stefan know, all the Bulls coverage you guys have done this year, I thought was absolutely amazing. And all those people that aren't subscribed to The Athletic should. Darnell, I got one last question for you, kind of going full circle here, listening to the Bill Simmons podcast a couple weeks ago, they were talking about this idea, and I wanted to get your perspective as a beat reporter. They were talking about changes that should be made in terms of the way that the game is covered now. They were talking about, they felt like it was weird that reporters were allowed to be let into the locker room. They feel like that's kind of a Stone Age type of routine at this point. And they were trying to talk through a system of how they could still allow beat reporters to get quotes and get stories and talk to these guys on a regular basis, but maybe do it in a not so invasive environment. How do you feel about the way that it's constructed as far as the way you cover games and the way that you cover a team since you've been doing this for such a long time? I'm curious if there's anything that you would think about changing in terms of the coverage.
Man, that's like a conversation to have at the bar over several drinks. I really don't have a neat little answer for you. I wish I did, but it's so complex.
Sure.
And I'd hate to come off like I'm ripping players or teams and organizations for how they handle things. I got to be careful with what I say because I don't want it to come off like that. But I do think that there needs to be more understanding with what the media's job is and the media's role. I think that there's a lack of awareness just coming into the league for a lot of players. You know, Chris Paul did something the other day on the podium after one of those games where someone asked them, I think it was in their first round series, someone they had just finished, someone asked them if they wanted the Rockets or the Warriors. Clint Capella sitting next to him said, yeah, he admitted, yeah, I want the Warriors. And Chris Paul immediately starts shaking his head, and then he says, yeah, you're going to end up all over Bleacher Report. And I covered Chris Paul. You know, I knew him back in his first two seasons, and actually he was my favorite player when he came into the league. It just happened that I ended up covering the guy. But I'm just sitting there looking like, what's Chris Paul's deal about his teammate? No one asked the question to Chris Paul, but his teammate answering the question honestly. So what if he ends up all over Bleacher Report? You know, that's his decision. Let the man, you know, speak his mind. And so I took issue with that, and it just, to me, it showed – It was a clear illustration of where the trust is, or the lack of trust is between players and reporters. You know, and then the icing on the cake in that setting was, you know, I think Clint Capella said something like, you know, to be the best, you got to beat the best. So why not go through them? We got to go through them at some point. And then Chris Paul says, make sure you guys print that too. Like, people in the room weren't going to print that too. Yeah, the headline was going to be, we want the Warriors, because that's what he said. But, you know, there's just so much distrust. There's so much skepticism that I feel like there needs to be some sort of summit where, you know, leaders – Chris Paul is the president of the Players Association. So,
right.
You know, there needs to be some sort of summit where we all get in the room, the president of the Professional Basketball Writers Association, maybe Michelle Roberts as the leader of the Players Union, and Chris Paul, and a couple of players who are passionate about it and can make change, and a couple of media writers who may be prominent and can and are passionate about it and can make change. So there just needs to be a conversation on where things are going, how we're getting there, and how we can work together. Because when you have players like Russell Westbrook, superstar players like Russell Westbrook saying next question, there's going to be a trickle-down effect, and players are going to read or watch what these guys are doing, and they're going to take their cues from them. And I think that is a little bit of a slippery slope. Steve Kerr called it dangerous, what Russell Westbrook was doing. But there's just so much distrust that we've got to come together and figure out a way to have a level of understanding, if nothing else. When you understand what my job is, you're going to have more of an appreciation for my job. When I understand what you're going through and how you are viewing the media's role, then I'm going to be more compassionate in terms of that seat that you're sitting in. So I just think that that's really broken down over the years. There's way too much media in these locker rooms. A lot of people who are there not really doing a job or asking good questions or asking any questions, and they're just kind of there. So there's things that can be done on both sides to curtail some of what we're seeing, and I think we can approach it a different way. So I don't know if that's possible, because these guys are their brands are so huge, and they've got so much reach that they don't really need the media like they did before. So like I said, Jordan, it's a convoluted answer, but it's a complex situation that I'm obviously very passionate about. I'd like to see some changes. I don't know where they could start with those changes and how much it actually happened, because these guys are just so huge in terms of brands at this point.
All right. Well, I think we know what happens next. At some point this summer, Darnell, Jordan, and I are getting together, having lots of beers, and I'll just I'll hide a tape recorder in one of my pockets, and we'll just pretend that it's not recording, and we'll have the second part of this conversation.
Matt, are they bringing you guys back for another year of the Outsiders?
We can't say officially yet. You know, NBC's like calendar as far as how they dole out their budget goes from October to October. So me, Big Dave, and John have a sit down with Bulldog, our executive producer, next week, where we're going to talk about what happens next. We're hoping that that we're going to get picked up for a second season, and hopefully not just that, but kind of branch out and explore new ways to add content to the network. So, you know, we had a lot of fun with it, and I hope that we get to do it again.
I hope so too, man. You guys do a great job. You know, I'm a fan of that show. Whenever I'm not at the game, you know, I try to tune in when I'm at home. So I hope you guys get picked up, man. You guys do a great job.
I appreciate that, man. And, you know, we appreciate the fact that you gave us some love and some exposure through The Athletic. Although you did get us in trouble with campaign. When you had your conversation with him, we did not mean to hurt campaign's feelings. Hey, that's all in the past now, right?
Campaign is out of sight, out of mind, man. You got no problem.
Yes. Thank the good Lord for that. Darnell, we always appreciate when you come by the podcast. He's Darnell Mayberry, senior Bulls writer for The Athletic Chicago. As I mentioned, if you aren't subscribed, you should be. You can read his amazing piece covering Russell Westbrook and his experience covering Russ over several years in Oklahoma City. Looking forward to reading your Q&A with Bulls point guard Chris Dunn, and much more Bulls coverage over the offseason, draft, free agency, all that good stuff. Follow Darnell on Twitter at Darnell Mayberry. Darnell, thanks for stopping by, man. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you again sometime.
Thanks, Darnell.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Thank you again to Darnell Mayberry for jumping on the show. Follow him on Twitter at Darnell Mayberry. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. You've got any reaction or any opinion from that or anything else we've talked about throughout this week? We'd love to hear from you. So hit us up there or on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley, Bulls Nation. Have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt and our guest, Darnell Mayberry, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com